You're tuned into All Together Now, WGXC's collaborative evening news program, Monday through Saturday, 6 to 7 p.m. Today we'll hear a bit of an interview from Nicole Labou, Claudia Abbott-Barish, and Mandana Vasigi of Wild Gather, a new Hudson Valley group with hands-on training in herbalism, from the May 23rd edition of Roots, Runners, and Rhizomes with Sarah Faulkner and Lauren Gambroni. We'll also hear an excerpt from the 2016 Music Mentors Project at Hudson High School, and some of the 4th and 5th grade chorus at Caro Elementary School. And Buick and Gase and their song General Dome is the song of the day as they perform fundraiser for Good Food for Hudson at Club Helsinki on Wednesday, May 25th. Stay tuned to All Together Now.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Accra, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews. From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio Daily News and Weather Report for Wednesday, May 25th, 2016. I'm Philip Grant. Jim Plank is reporting in the Daily Mail that the Nature Conservancy announced it has purchased a 70-acre parcel on the north side of Platte Cove in Hunter, connecting the lands of the Catskill Center for Conservation and Development on the west to those of the New York State Forest Preserve on the north and the east. It encompasses a portion of the Long Path, the 357-mile roundabout hiking trail that runs from New York City up to join Boyd Thatcher State Park near Albany. The parcel was one of only a few at the head of the Clove that remained in private hands. It was acquired from Platte Clove resident Vera Bolsack, whose family has owned it for more than three decades. Bolsack said, and I quote, "I am so pleased that the Nature Conservancy helped me to protect the land and that it will always remain undeveloped. It's a great comfort to know that this beautiful land will be protected for generations to come," end quote. You can read that full story in the Daily Mail. Katie Kosajansky is reporting in the Register Star that newly appointed Columbia County Economic Development Corporation CEO F. Michael Tucker discussed active economic development projects at a public meeting on Tuesday, May the 24th. Tucker said the County Industrial Development Agency has been helping Chicago-based specialty concrete manufacturer Architectural Cast Stone Incorporated with the purchase and expansion of a property in the Gerald R. Simmons Commerce Park in Ghent. The architectural firm produces various concrete features for buildings. Tucker said a total of 28 jobs will be created during the company's first year of operation. It is requesting sales and mortgage tax exemptions from the county. A special board meeting will be held on Thursday, May the 26th, to consider the application and set a public hearing for sometime in early June. Other pending CEDC projects include a senior housing development in Claverick and a distillery in the Routes 9H and 66 corridor. Tucker also updated the board on the $6 million sewer expansion project planned for that same part of the county. You can read that full story in the Register Star. Daily Freeman is reporting that unemployment rate in Mid-Hudson and Catskill counties were lower in April 2016 than last year. The State Department of Labor reported on Tuesday, May the 24th. Columbia County had the region's lowest jobless rate last month at 3.7%, a reduction of one-half of a percentage point since 2015. Columbia's rate was the second lowest in the state. Greene County's jobless rate was 5.7% last month, down from 6.2% the previous year. Unemployment declined in Delaware, Dutchess, Sullivan, and Ulster counties as well. The statewide unemployment rate last month was 4.6%. You can read that full story in the Daily Freeman. Matthew Hamilton is reporting at Capital Confidential that advocates for a state-level single-payer health care system are stepping up their calls for legislative action before the end of the current session on June 16th. While the Assembly passed a bill last year, approval by the Republican-controlled state Senate is unlikely. Assembly member and Health Committee Chairman Richard Gottfried said at a rally in Albany on Tuesday, May 24th, under single-payer all-state residents, and I quote, would be entitled to full, complete health coverage, better health coverage than you or I or anybody in New York has today, end quote. The call for a Medicare for All system was not without its detractors. A representative of the fiscally conservative Empire Center said the state's high Medicaid and workers' compensation costs could be addressed by improving those programs, not with the adoption of a single-payer health care system. And the New York Health Plan Association accused single-payer supporters of having a, and I quote, utopian view, end quote, of the issue. You can read that full story at Capital Confidential. Cornell Cooperative Extension is holding a field meeting on hay and small grain management throughout the area, including a May 26 workshop on pest management and agronomy of rye, wheat, barley, and malton barley oats at Kukon Brothers LLC on 2329 U.S. Route 9 in Livingston. Lower corn prices mean many farmers are switching to hay, which is why the meetings are focusing on small grains and hay. Meetings are meant for both new and veteran farmers, and details are at pub.cce.cornell.edu/event_registration/main/events.cfm. A complete listing of all the meetings is on the WGXC Newsroom website, newsroom.wgxc.org. U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand urged the United States Environmental Protection Agency to add Wappinger Creek in Dutchess County to the Superfund National Priorities List in a letter on May the 23rd. The designation would allow for a remedial investigation and feasibility study to proceed and would make the Dutchess County site eligible for funds to conduct long-term cleanup operations on the creek that was polluted at an industrial park used for textile dyeing, manufactured gas plant operations, metal planting, ammunition production, and chemical manufacturing for 180 years with mercury and polycytic aromatic hydrocarbons released into the creek. Gillibrand said in a press release, and I quote, adding Wappinger Creek to the Superfund National Priorities List would allow the EPA to take the necessary action to build a comprehensive plan to clean the creek. The designation needs to be expedited to help protect the public health and mitigate the damage done to the environment in Dutchess County. In the interim, the EPA should also use the comment period as an opportunity to give the community updates on the current situation and answer questions regarding public health and safety concerns, end quote. A full text of the senator's letter to the EPA can be found on the WGXC Newsroom website, newsroom.wgxc.org. Time Warner Cable reports that Kinder Morgan officially withdrew its federal application to build the Northeast Energy Direct Pipeline on May the 23rd. The company said a few weeks ago that the market for natural gas meant building the pipeline from Schoharie County across Albany and Rensselaer counties into Massachusetts was not economically viable. Currently, the proposed Constitution Pipeline along I-88 did not get permits from the State Department of Environmental Conservation, and the Pilgrim Pipeline, proposed largely along I-87, is in the first stages of permit seeking. You can read that full story at Time Warner Cable. Jordan Carleo Evangeliste reports in the Albany Times Union that the Albany County Sheriff Craig Apple and Bart Johnson, head of TSA security operations at upstate airports, want to make it a crime to refuse additional security screening at Albany International Airport. But the New York Civil Liberties Union, the Roman Catholic Diocese of Albany's Commission on Peace and Justice, and a coalition of local mental health professionals have objected to the proposed law, saying there could be many reasons innocent people might need to leave a screening line. The article says those involved believe this would be the first law of its kind adopted in the United States.
The executive board of the Capital District branch of the New York State Psychiatric Association sent a letter to Albany County legislators saying that the law would, and I quote, put our patients at unnecessary risk of harm without adding significantly to the safety of the airport, end quote. Currently, the proposal is in the legislature's Public Safety Committee. You can read that full story in the Albany Times-Union.
Overnight, there is a 30% chance of rain, the low around 61, then the 30% chance of rain continues Friday, mainly after 10 a.m. Could be partly sunny Friday with a high near 83, low around 64. Saturday, again, a 50% chance of occasional showers or thunderstorms, partly sunny with a high near 84 and muggy, low around 65 Saturday night. Sunday, a high of 79, and again, a 40% chance of rain.
The Public Service Commission holds public hearings on May 26th in Kingston about the state's clean energy standard, which would require utility companies to buy increasing amounts of electricity from renewable and nuclear sources, among many other proposals. The PSC is accepting comments on the clean energy standard proposal through June 6th and holding several public hearings, including the Kingston event, with an afternoon informational session at 2 p.m. and a public hearing from 3 to 5 p.m., an evening information session at 6 p.m., and a public hearing from 7 to 9 p.m. These meetings all take place at Kingston City Hall, Council Chambers on the second floor at 420 Broadway in Kingston. Greg Hudson reports in the Daily Mail that Tannersville's first farmers market debuts Sunday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. in the large municipal lot behind Last Chance Antiques and Cheese Cafe. There will be produce, flowers, crafts, goat milk, baked goods, and other farm products, according to Ann Jakubowski, executive director of the Hunter Foundation. The foundation is also putting on Memorial Day weekend events throughout town, such as the rubber duck races and a carnival at Rip Van Winkle Lake. The carnival will be open May 27th from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. and is open May 28th and 29th from noon to 11 p.m. On Memorial Day, the carnival will operate from noon to 3 p.m. The duck race begins on Main Street at 11 a.m. on May 28th with a crazy boat race at 2 p.m. The town's Memorial Day parade is at noon Sunday on Main Street. Read the full story in the Daily Mail.
All right. All together now. Ready?
All Together Now is a new evening news show brought to you by WGXE in Greene and Columbia counties and WOOC in Troy. The show is a unique, community-based collaboration between listeners and programmers, both on air and off. If you want to get involved, send us an email at info@wgxc.org.
Hudson Mayor Tiffany Martin Hamilton stopped by Columbia Memorial Hospital May 25th for WGXC's special live broadcast with Philip Grant, Holly Tanner, and Justin Weaver live at the Columbia Memorial Hospital in Hudson.
Hamilton Martin is here, the mayor of the city of Hudson. Welcome.
And she's moving on.
Good morning.
Sarah will be back shortly. But Tiffany does have to leave and do mayor stuff. So
you're
a busy lady. Mm-hmm. We're happy you can be here.
I feel like I'm speed dating, don't you?
I know, it is. Yeah, okay. Ring a bell. Ding, ding, ding.
I don't know who I'd pick. Well, neither, for obvious reasons. But anyway. So, Madam Mayor, yeah.
Good morning.
How's it going?
Hey, thank you. How are you?
Wonderful.
How are things going?
Things are going very well.
Let's talk about the shacks.
Yeah, the shacks are back.
Let's get right into it. You only got 10 minutes.
The shacks are back.
Did you feel that? That was just
it is speed dating. It's speed dating.
The bus is cruising down
speed
the street.
Radio.
And, yeah. What would you like to talk about?
Well, we just saw that you are, you know, the shacks have been near and dear to your heart for quite some time, and you are putting forward the movement to have the fencing torn down.
Let me actually moved back.
Moved back.
Yes.
But it will be accessible now to the public, so people can go in and go fishing. And you want to just talk a little bit about what's going on there?
Sure. So the event the other day, that the event that we had on Sunday, was really to, it was to bring people in the community together to start to talk about what they would like to see happen at that location, bearing in mind the location's eligibility for national and state historic designations. We also had the Columbia Land Conservancy there, so they had, they were able to shed some light on their potential plans for the North Bay, what they would like to see happen, meaning the trails that extend down into the landfill. We had representatives from the county there, so they could address, in general terms, concerns around. Around the landfill and talk about what they would propose potentially could happen, and really we're looking at the North Bay as a whole, and and see how all of that could come together to provide everyone public access. So that was really the impetus for the meeting, but also it's something I've wanted to see people have. Access for recreational purposes to the land and the river and the bay from the North Dock, and so we will in the next couple of weeks be moving the fences back, so the structures themselves will still be cordoned off and inaccessible. They've suffered some structural issues in the last 4 years just from lack of maintenance. So, but this will give a chance. Give people a chance to go down and enjoy the space and kayak and boat and fish. And
is there a plan to actually save those buildings that are in such structural disrepair?
At this point, there's no solid plan in place to do anything. That's really what this is, the beginning of a discussion and a much longer process. So it's. The plan is really what the community would like to see happen there, and also, as that's fleshed out, what we can support financially.
And your first 100 days is has come and gone. You've I think
4 months and 25 days.
There we go.
Not that anyone's counting.
Not that anyone's
nobody's counting. And 20 minutes. you've already. Done great things with getting the bridge down at the waterfront, that whole process, that bridge reopened. Can you talk about when that bridge, what's it called? Is it just called
the Ferry Street Bridge.
Ferry Street Bridge. Is there a time frame?
Yeah.
Sure.
Timeline?
So, with a lot of coordination between county and state and federal officials, and with and through the county TAC, we were able to secure financing, funding rather, and the first piece of that will come starting October 1st of this year. That covers preliminary design, incidentals, and then final design. In 2019, there is an additional batch of funding that comes through to purchase easements. And 2020, the construction will begin. At the same time, we're still pursuing other avenues for funding, in particular through Assemblywoman Dee Dee Barrett's office. Dee Dee's been a great advocate for us, and if there is a way for us to secure funding earlier than 2020 for construction, then we'll do that. But in the meantime, that's locked down. So.
Well, did you know, Tiffany Martin Hamilton, today is National Wine Day, and everybody here at Columbia Memorial, just so you know, today's National Wine Day.
Wow.
I don't know if you have any wine available, but we'd love some.
Menu.
I did not bring any with me.
Oh, darn.
Had I known.
It's also Liz Coleman Day.
It is Liz Coleman Day.
I am so excited that
we're
going to
be speaking shortly with Lynn to see why she has a day. Why does Liz have a
why
day?
Not?
I think we all know why.
Ask why?
But we're going to ask her about that and
yes.
more. I saw yesterday was Lynn Brandt.
Lynn Finn Day.
Yeah.
Yes. So Lieutenant Finn is retiring from the Hudson Police Department after more than 26 years of service, and she has been such an amazing asset to the department and the community, and it's quite a tremendous loss, but I know that I know she's got a lot of great years of retirement ahead of her, and she'll be sorely missed, but I'm so happy for her and so grateful for everything she's done for Hudson.
Wish her well.
Yeah, and how's your sidekick Lisa Walsh doing?
Oh, she's doing great. She's hiding at the table over there because she tends to stay.
We know she's a shy wallflower.
Yeah.
Say it a little louder.
Just to keep her in office, you're sitting over there?
We can hear you.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
She's quite the wallflower. I don't know if you knew that.
It's safer.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes. We thank you. I know
thank
you have
you.
A time
for being
frame.
We have the DARE graduation to head off to.
Oh,
it starts in 15 minutes.
Oh,
so,
great.
Is there anything you want to quickly say before you go that you want?
Any other hot things going on?
Well, I would like to say I am so psyched that Liz Coleman is in town. I cannot even begin to tell you. And and I was near to tears when I saw her smiling, amazingly beautiful face this morning. So,
well, we definitely miss her, and we're happy to have her here.
I'm thrilled that she's
Absolutely.
Here. It was wonderful to be on the show. Thank you
well,
both for having
for
me.
Thank you for hanging
there.
Out, sticking with
Give
us.
Give it up for Anytime. Tiffany Martin Hamilton.
Thank you.
The mayor.
Tune in to All Together Now, WGXC's collaborative hour-long news show at 6 p.m. featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews. Tune in to learn more about the issues that affect communities throughout the Capital Region and the Hudson Valley, from the Catskills to the Berkshires. Next, we have these reports.
Consumer advocates were in Albany yesterday before the legislative session ends, urging passage of a bill to require labeling of genetically modified foods. The advocates maintain the bill has the support of a majority of the Assembly and is sponsored by almost half of the senators. Alex Beecham with Food and Water Watch says there's no reason lawmakers shouldn't bring the bill up for a vote now.
I think we're closer than we've ever been to passing it, but we really need a commitment from leadership to get this bill done before the legislative session ends, which is now just a few weeks away.
The food industry opposes GMO labeling, saying the food is perfectly safe and labeling would only raise costs and confuse consumers. But polls indicate that more than 90% of Americans want GMO foods to be labeled. Connecticut and Maine have passed GMO labeling laws, but they only go into effect when neighboring states pass similar laws. Now, Beecham says, the pivotal state in the push for labeling laws is Vermont.
They've passed a GMO labeling law that goes into effect this July, and that's really kind of changed the game. I think you see momentum on our side and more and more people speaking up and taking action.
Some food producers, such as Campbell's Soups, are voluntarily labeling their products that contain genetically modified organisms. According to Beecham, the New York bill, like the law in Vermont, would allow producers and retailers to use GMO or genetically engineered on packaging to meet the labeling requirements.
The key thing is just that consumers have the ability to choose and say, okay, this is genetically engineered and this product over here isn't. And right now that's really lacking in the marketplace.
The current legislative session comes to an end on June 16th. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
Casey Seiler in the Albany Times-Union reports that Governor Andrew Cuomo made something of a political stunt May 24th. At the end of a legislative session without any ethics action, and with the recent prison sentencing of the former leaders of the Assembly and Senate, Cuomo proposed 8 bills that would, in varying degrees, close the so-called LLC loophole, which lets limited liability companies make far larger political donations than individuals or corporations. Quote, "The point I'm trying to make is I propose closing the LLC loophole for everyone, every elected office, Republican Party, Democratic Party," end quote, Cuomo said while taking questions from reporters outside his office. Quote, "I've proposed it before, it's gone nowhere. So now I'm saying, okay, any of the above. If you're unwilling to do it for yourself, do it just for me," end quote. Republican leader John Flanagan, who is the majority leader even though there are more Democrats in the Senate, said in a statement that the governor's proposal, quote, "fails to fundamentally address the root cause of the problems that exist within our campaign finance system, most notably a lack of enforcement, a lack of transparency, and a lack of full and honest disclosure," end quote. Read the full story in the Albany Times-Union. This has been the WGXC News Update. You can read these stories and more by visiting the newsroom at WGXC.org.
Thanks, 10-4.
You're listening to radio news about radio waves. Headlines from the ether. Headlines.
Science Daily reports that researchers from the University of Stuttgart and the Fraunhofer Institute for Applied Solid-State Physics used radio transmission to send the contents of a conventional DVD in under 10 seconds, setting a new world record in wireless data transmission. The transmission was clocked at 6 gigabytes per second over 37 kilometers between Cologne and the town of Wartburg in Germany at 71 to 76 gigahertz in the so-called E-band, regulated for terrestrial and satellite broadcasting. The researchers said they needed to use the millimeter waves of those frequencies to send the data so fast. The group used a highly directive parabolic antenna to send the signals and say there are several applications for the technology. It could be used to offload data from Earth observation satellites down to Earth, or the terrestrial radio transmissions in the E-band could expand rural broadband and can also be set up quickly for emergency broadcasts. Read the full story in Science Daily. This is Tom Rowe for Wavefarm Radio and WGXC. Next up, we hear a little bit of Dan Udell's recording on YouTube of the 2016 Music Mentors Project at Hudson High School.
It's time for the performance to begin. Thank you for your attention. How's everyone today?
Good.
You remember, like Howard said, my name is Greg, and who remembers, if you're listening closely, or sixth graders that remember last week, what instrument do I play again? Good, exactly. It's a movie called the Snake Charmer Instrument. That's good. This first piece that we're going to play for you is music from a ballet, actually. It's called Pulcinella by Igor Stravinsky. How many of you have heard of the artist Picasso? Good. Picasso actually designed the costume and the set for the original production of this. It's a 20th century piece, so I hope you enjoy it. Thank you.
Our next interview, Nicole Labou, Claudia Abbott-Barish, and Mandana Vasiga of Wild Gather, a new Hudson Valley group training people in herbalism. They talked to Sarah Faulkner and Lauren Jambroni May 23rd on Roots Runners Rhizomes on WGXC.
Do you want to be the start of having everyone go around and introduce themselves, and then we'll get to talking about Wild Gather, the program.
Cool. Hi, everybody. I'm Lauren, your co-host here on Roots Runners Rhizomes. Some of you might know me in town. I have a little small herb company called Good Fight Herb Company. I'm at the farmer's market every Saturday. And I've been around here for about 6 years now. And I grow and gather a large variety of medicinal herbs here in the Hudson Valley. My garden's down in Germantown. And I have a little apothecary workshop here in Hudson, and I make medicine and offer it in a lot of different ways to the community. And over the last couple years, so many folks have been asking about classes and learning opportunities, and at the time being like a one-woman show doing probably too many things. I wasn't always able to offer consistent classes or learning opportunities. So I wanted to invite friends or asked a couple friends we'll be talking to today to see if they wanted to start this foundational herbalism program with me here in Hudson so that we could respond to that desire of folks wanting to learn about herbal medicine. And I also wanted to collaborate with other folks on that. And so, yeah.
Awesome. Thanks. Yeah. And you also have, you still work with apprentices yourself as well.
Yep. So I have about, maybe like 5 to 7 folks right now who are working with me doing work trade in exchange for my herbal CSA. I have a weekly intern, and I also just hired someone for a very part-time position this year. So yeah, I went from a crew of 1 to about 7, which is really exciting this year.
Great. So we'll hear more about the structure and format of Wild Gather after we hear from everyone. So Claudia? Are you okay?
Sure.
Okay.
Perfect.
I'm Claudia, and I live in Milan, which is good 35 minutes south of here, and grew up in and around the Hudson Valley, and came back to this area going into my fourth season, and grew up with kind of multi-generational family members who are just very much into plants and foraging, and from the UK, and so very much subsisted in a lot of ways on hedgerow foods. And so plants have just always been really in a huge part of my life. And when I moved back here, I kind of moved back here to grow herbs and share them with the community. And so I live on about 4.5 acres and cultivate some land down there, growing herbs for myself and for my community and other herbalists to come and harvest for themselves. And then I also sell locally to restaurants herbs and edible flowers. And then my other gig is in transformative mediation. So I do conflict resolution with the county for civil, family, and partner disputes. And that's also kind of informs a lot of how I imagine my relationship with plants and how plants sort of have helped to guide me and how I relate to people in my environment as well. So, yeah.
Awesome. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Nicole?
Hi, this is Nicole. My name is Nicole Labou, and I am an educator and here in Hudson, New York. I run a nonprofit called Kite's Nest, where we do many different youth programmings. So I came to herbalism a little bit through just my family and my exposure with family and food as medicine. And so came from the Bay Area here about 5 years ago, and where I went to herb school out there, and have been just studying, kind of continue to study my, it's just a life kind of practice for me. And
awesome. Thanks for sharing that. And we've had Nicole on the show before talking about food and medicine. I think that was maybe 2 years ago. So folks can take a listen to that. Mandana, are you ready to tell us all about yourself?
Hey, I'm Mandana. For me, I grew up with plants. I'm Persian, and in my culture, we use plants as medicine, and we still use plants primarily for medicine, and we use wild foods for our food. And so I grew up foraging with my mom for barberries and mulberries and sumac and so many plants, and it's always just been a part of my life. But when I started getting older, I started asking more questions and starting to ask Latin names, and my mom said, I had to learn these plants in Farsi and English, and I'm not the person to ask about this. So then I just started hitchhiking and traveling all over the country and learning from herbalists and old-timers that just pick me up in the Smoky Mountains and bring me to their farm and show me different plants. And that's sort of how my second half of my education went. And I did that for about 8 years and then started feeling like I was ready to start to teach, and was just feeling like doing it on my own didn't feel right, because I feel like it's such a symbiotic relationship that we share with the plants. And so that's when my community started coming together, and I'm really excited about this program because it's way bigger than just using plants as medicine. I primarily use plants as food, and I like to use the plants for their fiber as well, and I educate folks about earth skills and wild food and plants as medicine.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thanks so much. So maybe if someone or multiple people could speak a little now about the logistics and the format. Mm-hmm. We're coming up soon. Registration is still open. Mm-hmm. But how? Yep. What's it going to look like? And how times and days and all that good stuff.
Yes, maybe we could share this, y'all. But first of all, the website is www.wildgather.com, and you can register online for the program, but first, you know, also take a look at what the program offers. But everything is on there that you'll need to take a look and then register. So it's 4 weekends. 1 weekend a month from June through September, Saturday and Sunday. It's a total of 40 hours. So this is a great starting program for folks who really want to learn more about plants and identifying them in the habitats that they're already growing, as well as learning about their medicinal and emotional and utilitarian uses and all about their habits. And so it's a great foundational program if folks aren't ready to up and move for, you know, a 3 year or 8 month program. You know, it's a great way to get your feet wet. Like I said, a great foundational course. So it starts, the first class starts June 18th. So registration will be rolling until then. And it's all day Saturday, all day Sunday through September. And then each weekend has its own kind of theme or you know, point to it. So I'll let these guys talk a little bit more about that. And cool. Who's next? Oh, yeah, here you go. We have a little syllabus lined out for you.
So we're you're listening to Roots Runners Rhizomes, and we're on the air with the folks from Wild Gather. If you have any questions, call in 518-828-0290. We're about to hear about the curriculum.
Yeah,
go for it. Week one, we have kind of just really getting to know each other. We're going to be thinking about meeting, getting to know the plants, engaging in activities that will really facilitate nature awareness. We'll be building kind of, you know, our relationships and creating a space with one another, and really just starting to get a sense of who we are together as a group. And then Sunday, the second day, will be a day that focuses on health justice, and that's the first week. Mm-hmm. And then we have week two, will be focusing more on botany and wildcrafting ethics. people doing some plant ID, thinking about plant actions and energetics, and studying a little bit of the materia medica of locally grown plants, working with plants, spirit essences, plant essences, and thinking about energetic hygiene and the process of medicine making. So for the third week, we have continuing with the themes of botany, plant ID, kind of going deeper here, wildcrafting ethics, more actions and energetics, more materia medica.
And that second weekend we'll be out in the woods and wilds, and right. Then the third weekend we're continuing along the same things of botany and plant ID and the actions and medicinal constituents of plants, but we'll be then doing that in gardens that we cultivate. So we'll have a little bit of two different types of environments that we'll be working in, like I said, the wild and then in a cultivated garden. So classroom will be outside, and there's also on our registration form, this kind of goes along with health justice themes, if folks have particular access needs that would make it easier for them to participate in going out into the woods and wilds and gardens, we have plenty of space for you to let us know exactly what you need to be comfortable in those settings. And then once you register, we send along a registration packet, which will, with kind of helpful tools of what to bring, what to wear, what might be useful to have on hand with you, just so folks know we won't be indoors in a typical classroom setting for the majority of the time, although there will be some of that.
Yeah, we're really thinking about this as like a hands-on, really participatory program that's going to have us outside and in different spaces. We will have opportunities to kind of be together indoors and, when we're making medicine, perhaps, or when appropriate, but we will be outside a lot. And then the fourth week, we have us doing a lot of food as medicine, so collecting wild foods, thinking about herbs as food and as tonics, thinking about, nutrient density in whole foods. And that's another, we'll be, weaving throughout, we'll be talking about health justice. But, we're excited about a class project, too, that we're going to be weaving throughout the program.
Next, the national headlines from Public News Service.
Welcome to the Public News Service daily newscast for Wednesday, May 25th, 2016. I'm Veronica Carter. Topping the news today, voters in Oregon will be asked if they want to raise taxes on huge corporations to pay for schools, healthcare, and senior services. Also out west, protesters rallying against fracking, and comedian Bill Cosby will stand trial. In the news today, a proposal heading to the November ballot would raise taxes on the largest corporations in Oregon in order to fund education, healthcare, and senior services in the state. Eric Tegetoff has more.
That proposal, Initiative Petition 28, would add $3 billion a year to the state's budget, according to an analysis by the Legislative Revenue Office this week. Lisa Fragola, a second-grade teacher in Eugene who worked with A Better Oregon to gain signatures, says schools are in desperate need of funds.
The services that have been cut have long ago reached a critical point, and now what we're looking at is a crisis, and I don't think we can wait any longer.
The proposal would increase the minimum tax on C corporations with sales of more than $25 million in Oregon to 2.5%.
Protesters rallied on Tuesday to keep a statewide moratorium on fracking for oil and gas in federal waters off the California coast.
The group picketed in front of the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management's offices in Camarillo because the federal officials are expected to release a final decision by the end of the week on whether to lift a moratorium that was imposed in January. Tomas Rebecki, Ventura County organizer for the nonprofit advocacy group Food and Water Watch, says this is a rushed decision with major consequences.
They're allowed to dump 9 billion gallons of contaminated wastewater directly into our oceans every year. The environmental review that they put together was inadequate and too quick, and there needs to be more studies done because this can definitely negatively impact our health and our oceans.
The draft assessment argues that fracking can be done safely, but Rebecki maintains offshore fracking is inherently dangerous, citing the risk of oil spills and pollution from wastewater and a possible link to earthquakes. I'm Suzanne Potter.
Children and infants are especially at risk for health problems due to fracking, according to a new study by the Center for Environmental Health. Ellen Webb with the center and the report's lead author says it's the first comprehensive literature review on respiratory risks associated with unconventional oil and gas operations.
Air pollution is basically routine in fracking. So many people living near fracking have reported health problems. But the actual literature being able to show cause and effect is really just starting to emerge.
Study focused on 5 pollutants recognized as hazardous by federal agencies and produced during the fracking process: ozone, particulate matter, silica dust, benzene, and formaldehyde. Bill Cosby is going to trial to face accusations of sexual assault. Pennsylvania judge yesterday said there is enough evidence for the case to move forward. Judge ordered the 78-year-old to stand trial over allegations brought against him by a former Temple University employee who claims the comedian drugged and assaulted her back in 2004. Arizona's controversial sheriff, Joe Arpaio, may be facing some jail time. Latino activists and supporters say he should go to jail. Federal judges ruling that the sheriff and his top aides committed civil contempt of court for ignoring orders to stop doing immigration enforcement. Justice Department is expected to have representatives at a community forum today on the contempt case against the sheriff. In Portland, the police chief is being placed on administrative leave after he reportedly misled investigators about an accidental shooting. The mayor says he took the action against Chief Larry O'Day in the best interest of the city and the Portland Police Department. The Oregonian reported the chief failed to identify himself as a police officer when he first talked to a deputy sheriff about an April hunting accident. It wasn't until authorities interviewed his wounded hunting companion 4 weeks later that they learned the chief was actually involved in the shooting. Republicans moving ahead with the attempted impeachment of the IRS commissioner. Virginia Republican Bob Goodlatte accused John Koskinen of misconduct in the aftermath of the IRS targeting scandal. It involved the agency's targeting of conservative groups looking for tax-exempt status. Republicans have accused Koskinen of making false statements and failing to fully cooperate with congressional investigators. Donald Trump facing a lot of pressure to publicly release his tax returns. Hillary Clinton cited long-standing precedent and said, "Let's see what you got there." While campaigning in Southern California, she chided Trump for his company's bankruptcies and warned that Trump's history with money could bankrupt America. Memorial Day weekend coming up, and if you're going to grill out and you plan on cooking some burgers, you really need a meat thermometer. Doctors say the actual temperature that determines whether your meat is truly done is what's inside with a thermometer, not by what you see by looking at the inside of the burger. Chicken should be cooked to 160 degrees. Temperature danger zone that you want to avoid ranges from 40 to 140 degrees. That means that hot food should be held at least 140 degrees prior to serving. Cold food should be at least 40 degrees or even colder. Once the meat is cooked, key to keeping it safe is holding the food at these temperatures up until it's served. Babies born prematurely have more risks of health, social, and economic problems down the road. A new study published in JAMA Pediatrics looked at babies who had low birth weights and found they're more likely to be unemployed and have low self-esteem as they get older. They were also more likely to stay single or be less sexually active. They seem to be more prone to chronic health problems, too. The good news is they seem to have fewer problems with drugs and alcohol. You're up to date. I'm Veronica Carter for Public News Service. Member and listener supported and online at publicnewsservice.org.
Overnight, there is a 30% chance of rain, the low around 61, then the 30% chance of rain continues Friday, mainly after 10 a.m. Could be partly sunny Friday with a high near 83, low around 64. Saturday, again, a 50% chance of a occasional showers or thunderstorms. Partly sunny with a high near 84 and muggy. Low around 65 Saturday night. Sunday a high of 79 and again a 40% chance of rain. This is Tamara with the community calendar for WGXC. Go to WGXC.org and click on the community calendar to find out more about what's going on in your community. And you can even add your own event. Click on the Add an Event button and copy and paste the information about your local community event in. Soon folks like me will read it on the radio, and folks around the world will see it online at WGXC.org in the community calendar. Thursday, May 26th, Hunter has a public hearing, 7 p.m. at the Hunter Village Hall.
Next, it's time for the Hudson Valley Song of the Day, a performance from a musician visiting the Capital Region or Hudson Valley, or who regularly plays around these parts.
Hudson's Buke and Gase perform with Aaron Dessner, Lisa Hannigan, Patrick Higgins, and DJ Scott Devendorf. 7 p.m. Wednesday, May 25th, a fundraiser for Hudson's Good Food for Hudson. This is Buke and Gase and General Dome.
All Together Now airs Monday through Saturday, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM in Greene and Columbia counties and WOOC LP 105.3 FM in Troy.